The courtroom is illuminated by the sort of hanging glass globes Jessie associates with the five-and-dime stores of her youth, and it is as sleepy as a grammar school classroom at the end of a winter day. As she walks forward down the aisle, she is aware of two sensations. Brandon's hand, still on the incurve of her waist, and the veil tickling against her cheeks like cobwebs. These two sensations combine to make her feel strangely bridal. Two lawyers stand before the judge's bench. The judge is leaning forward, looking down into their upturned faces, the three of them lost in some murmuring technical conversation. To Jessie, they look like a real-life recreation of a Bowes sketch from some Charles Dickens novel. The bailiff stands to the left, next to the American flag. Near him, the court stenographer is reading The Kitchen God's Wife as she waits for the current legal discussion to be over. And sitting at a long table on the far side of the rail, which divides the room between the area set aside for the spectators and that which belongs to the combatants, is a skinny, impossibly tall figure, clad in a bright orange jailhouse overall. Next to him is a man in a suit, surely another lawyer. The man in the orange jumpsuit is hunched over a yellow legal pad, apparently writing something. From a million miles away, Jessie feels Brandon Milleran's hand press more insistently against her waist. "This is close enough," he murmurs. She moves away from him. He's wrong. It's not close enough. Brandon doesn't have the slightest idea of what she's thinking or feeling, but that's okay. She knows. For the time being, all her voices have become one voice. She is basking in the unexpected unanimity, and what she knows is this. If she doesn't get closer to him now, if she doesn't get just as close as she can, he will never be far enough away. He will always be in the closet, or just outside the window, or hiding under the bed at midnight, grinning his pallid, wrinkled grin, the one that shows the glimmers of gold far back in his mouth. She steps quickly up the aisle toward the rail divider with the gauzy stuff of the veil touching her cheeks like tiny, concerned fingers. She can hear Brandon grumbling unhappily, but the sound is coming from at least 10 light-years away. Closer, but still on the next continent, one of the lawyers standing before the bench is muttering, "Feel that the state has been intransigent in this matter, Your Honor, and if you'll just look at our citations, most notably Castonguay versus Hollis." Closer still, and now the bailiff glances up at her, suspicious for a moment, then relaxing as Jessie raises her veil and smiles at him. Still holding her eye with his own, the bailiff jerks his thumb toward Joubert and gives his head a minute shake, a gesture which she can, in her heightened emotional and perceptual state, read as easily as a tabloid headline. "Stay away from the tiger, ma'am. Don't get within reach of his claws." Then he relaxes even more as he sees Brandon catch up with her. A parfait gentil night, if ever there was one. But he clearly does not hear Brandon's low growl. "Put the veil down, Jessie, or I will, goddammit." She not only refuses to do what he says, she refuses to even glance his way. She knows his threat is empty. He will not cause a scene in these hallowed surroundings, and will do almost anything to avoid being dragged into one. But it would not matter even if it weren't. She likes Brandon, she honestly does, but her days of doing things simply because it's a man doing the telling are over. She is only peripherally aware that Brandon is hissing at her, that the judge is still conferring with the defense lawyer and the county prosecutor, that the bailiff has lapsed back into his semi-coma, that the stenographer is slowly turning a page, her face dreamy and distant. Jessie's own face is frozen in the pleasant smile which disarmed the bailiff, but her heart is pounding furiously in her chest. She has now come within two steps of the rail, two short steps, and sees she was wrong about what Joubert is doing. He is not writing, after all. He is drawing. His picture shows a man with an erect penis roughly the size of a baseball bat. The man in the picture has his head down, and he is fellating himself. She can see the picture perfectly well. but she can still see only a small, pale slice of the artist's cheek, and the dank clots of hair which dangle against it. "Jesse, you can't," Brandon begins, grabbing at her arm. She snatches it away without looking back. All her attention is now fixed on Joubert.
"Hey,"
she stage whispers at him.
"Hey, you."
Nothing. At least not yet. She is swept by a feeling of unreality. Can it be she doing this? Can it really? And for that matter, is she doing it? No one seems to be noticing her. No one at all.
"Hey, asshole!"
Louder now, angry. Still a whisper, but only just barely.
"Psst! Psst! Hey, I'm talking to you!"
Now the judge looks up, frowning. So she is getting through to somebody, it seems. Brandon makes a groaning, despairing sound and clamps a hand on her shoulder. She would have yanked away from him if he had tried to pull her backward down the aisle, probably ripping off the top half of her dress in the process. And perhaps Brandon knows this, because he only forces her to sit down on the empty bench just behind the defense table. All the benches are empty. This is technically a closed hearing. And at that moment, Raymond Andrew Joubert finally turns around. His grotesque asteroid of a face, with its swollen, poochy lips, its knife blade of a nose, and its bulging bulb of a forehead, is totally vacant, totally incurious. But it is the face. She knows it at once. And the powerful feeling which fills her is mostly not horror. Mostly it is relief. Then, all at once, Joubert's face lights up. Color stains his narrow cheeks like a rash, and the red-rimmed eyes take on a hideous sparkle she has seen before. They stare at her now as they stared at her in the house on Kashwakamak Lake, with the exalted raptness of the irredeemable lunatic. And she is held, hypnotized, by the awful rise of recognition she sees in his eyes. "Mr. Milleron," the judge is asking sharply from some other universe. "Mr. Milleron, can you tell me what you're doing here and who this woman is?" Raymond Andrew Joubert is gone. This is the space cowboy, the specter of love. Its oversized lips wrinkle once more, revealing its teeth, the stained, unlovely, and completely serviceable teeth of a wild animal. She sees the glimmer of gold like feral eyes far back in a cave, and slowly, oh so slowly, the nightmare comes to life and begins to move. Slowly the nightmare begins to raise its freakishly long orange arms. "Mr. Milleron, I would like you and your uninvited guest to approach the bench, and immediately." The bailiff, alerted by the whiplash in that tone, snaps out of his daze. The stenographer shuts her novel without remembering to mark her place and looks around. Jessie thinks Brandon takes her arm, meaning to make her comply with the judge's order, but she cannot say for sure, and it doesn't matter in any case, because she cannot move. She might as well be planted waist-deep in a plug of cement. It is the eclipse again, of course. The total, final eclipse. After all these years, the stars are once again shining in the daytime. They are shining inside her head. She sits there and watches as the grinning creature in the orange overall raises its misshapen arms, still holding her with its muddy, red-rimmed gaze. It raises its arms until its long, narrow hands hang in the air about a foot from each of its pale ears. The mimicry is horribly effective. She can almost see the bedposts as the thing in the orange jumpsuit first revolves those splayed, long-fingered hands and then shakes them back and forth, as if they are being held by restraints which only he and the woman in the turned-back veil can see. The voice that comes out of its grinning mouth is a bizarre contrast to the gross overdevelopment of the face from which it drifts. It is a reedy, whining voice, the voice of an insane child.
"I don't think you're anyone,"
Raymond Andrew Joubert pipes up in that childish, wavering voice. It cuts through the stale, overheated air of the courtroom like a bright blade.
You're only made of moonlight.
And then it begins to laugh. It shakes its hideous hands back and forth within manacles only the two of them can see. And it laughs, laughs, laughs.